are obviously the lineup change, lineup changes we've had in the last few months, and our first U.S. tour this year, the Dallas or Die tour that we're doing, which is sponsored by the guitar company that builds my signature series, Strictly 7. So they're dragging us down to Dallas to the guitar show, the Dallas guitar show down there in April, and we figured, what the heck, let's book a whole bunch of shows and do a whole bunch of plans. So we're going all the way from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, down into Kentucky. We're doing a whole bunch of Texas shows. Literally, we're playing, I think, all eight corners of Texas. Because if you look at that state, I think it's not geometric. And, you know, we're finishing up doing Chicago, Detroit. And we're actually, our last show is here in Cleveland, Ohio, at the Breakfast Club on the Hi-Fi stage. And that's, humorously enough, that is a print out the flyer and get in for a free show.
Awesome.
So if you go to the, we're playing with a great hardcore band called At No End. They have that flyer, I think, is up on their MySpace page. So you print it out, bring it in, you get in for free. That's April 24th, which is a Saturday. That's the end of the show, end of the tour, the whole thing. So we will have been out for about 2.5 weeks at that point. So we should be pretty salty and smelly. And we're hoping people will show up and throw things at us.
I was just thinking that because, you know, you came and booed me. I figured I'd bring a couple cases of eggs down.
Thank you. Good, good. Well, I have a weird social hang-up. I'm literally socially retarded. And I don't mean that in, like, a mentally handicapped or born with an issue. I'm just socially retarded. To where I can't actually offer praise or congratulations to bands when they do well. I have to insult them and boo them. And, you know, just in general, like, you're the worst thing I've ever seen. It's actually high praise for me. So again, my sarcasm and humor doesn't always translate, especially on the internet.
Now let's talk about the lineup changes. Obviously, yes. The departure of a guitar player,
yep,
and singer. And, you know, talk about Michael Duncan a little bit, you know. And, you know, I know you worked with him in Legacy Uprising, or whatever, yep, you want to call it. I know we don't want to really mention,
well,
that, I guess.
It's called Legacy Uprising, but yeah. I produced Mike's band, his band Pound from Kentucky. Yep. I produced their upcoming album. I'm not sure what they're going to name it yet. It's not slated for release, but I produced that record for him. I also produced his vocals on a record that I don't know if it's ever coming out or not, for a band called Godlike Status.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mike got me the production gig for Legacy Uprising, where Mike was going to sing, and we ended up going out to Vegas for like 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And we got out there and we found out, oh, there's no songs. So Mike and I holed up in a hotel room with a lot of beers and too many cigars and wrote a really great heavy metal record that, you know, someday it'll come out. Again, I'm not sure, but that's where we kind of solidified the whole thing that Mike and I work really well together. We both are very excited and get excited about creating music together.
Mm-hmm.
So when Wags decided, you know, to kind of exit himself from the band, I mean, it was a mutual thing. We don't hate each other. It's nothing, you know, bitter and angry, although that would be a much more interesting story.
Blabbermouth,
sure,
would love to be bitter and angry.
Well, of course. Well, I just think that all the guys that post on there are bitter and angry. Oh, burn, sick burn! Take that, Basement Shredder 101 at yahoo.net! Sorry. Hey, and I heard I was like the second funniest guy on your show.
Actually, it's really funny because, like, many people, many of the listeners, I'll never forget this. You were the last interview that we had on here in 2008, and I had all these emails like, dude, you ever have that guy on again? And I'm like, yeah, that would be awesome, actually. And they go, dude, he was like the funniest guy. Him and the singer from Overkill, the two funniest guys you ever had on the show. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. Well, yeah, we'll do it again.
Yeah, I pooped my pants a little bit on that show. That was funny.
Can we say that on the air? Yeah, I know there's some heavy FCC regulation.
So obviously you got a tour coming up and, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, I did take some fan questions.
Okay.
And question number one.
Well, hey, now, hold on now. But you just cut me off in the middle of the story that we got off on tangent. You were asking me about the new singer.
Okay.
And let's get back on track, buddy.
So you're talking about
who's
Wags
in control of this interview? All right, what's going on over here?
So you're talking about Wags.
Yeah, Wags and I, we have a blood oath against each other now. So when we see each other, there'll be beatings. Of course, you'll probably break me because I bruise like a peach. No.
Yeah.
Actually, I think it ended amicably. I hope it did. I am not angry or any of that silliness with Wags. I haven't talked to him in a few months, but we got Mike and, you know, we really were sitting around, Jason and Bob's and I, and it's like, well, you know, what are we going to do? Who can we get? Because everyone's telling us, you guys are the dumbest three morons for getting. I mean, who's going to sing? Like, and, you know, Bob's, I actually had him play drums on the Legacy record. And he's like, dude, you know, Mike is such a great guy.
Yeah.
And we all enjoy each other's company. So, mm-hmm. you know, bonus. We had already talked about putting Shatter Messiah and Pound on tour together.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, do you think Mike would be into that? Because I know that, like, he's not sure if Pound can tour. And, you know, we barely even got into the conversation. He's like, you guys are going to ask me to join Shatter Messiah, aren't you? Well, yes, we are, Mike. Would you like the gig? He's like, I'll be up next week to do vocals. It's like, right on! That's what we're talking about. So we were really, really happy with that. And I'm telling you, you know, I've been sifting through all the old music that I have that I never wrote lyrics for, never had Wags mm-hmm. work on. And I mean, literally, man, you know, Bob and I could sit in a room for about a month and just sift through and not write new music. And we'd be able to release a record probably, you know, every 3 months for a good year. And, you know, just depending on things, we might actually be crazy and do that, you know, because, you know, with the digital thing, we can just put stuff for people to download and if they like it, and if not, and it makes it pretty cheap to do that for us.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so, you know, we got Mike in the band, and we parted ways with Dusty, who played guitar for us for, you know, these last couple of years, and, you know, he's a really good guy, but he just wasn't... for me, wasn't progressing where I needed him to, and we you know, decided to have a parting of ways. So, you know, but we got a great guy who's going to fill in for us on the tour, so we're still going to go out as a five-piece and have the nice big sound that I've always envisioned for Shatter. So, hooray!
Now,
Tony, you can go now.
I do have some questions. Actually, these are from fans. And
no comment.
Go ahead, caller. Oh, sorry.
Basically, the first question that I had, and... That was sent to me. Actually, the first question that was sent to me when I posted the interview, it was a guy living in Arkansas. His name is Dave Romari. He actually listens to the show.
Arkansas or Arkansas?
Arkansas.
I'm just looking at the letters on the board, man. Sorry.
But anyway, he wanted to know. He basically what he wrote is love the first album.
Cool.
Would like to really like the second album, but he can't find it anywhere.
Yeah, pretty heartbreaking, huh? Shit. Well, tell him to go to the Shatter Messiah MySpace page. You can purchase it there. We can mail it to you. Mm-hmm. Also, Amazon.com. You can download it if you don't care about getting the CD package.
Yeah.
There are ways to get it, but...
CD Baby, right?
Thank you, sir. CD Baby. I always forget.
So they can't get it. I mean, because he said he searched.
Yeah, well, the thing is, you know, our record deal is with Europe.
Yeah.
And so for people to get it here in the States, it's an import, so you got to pay all these ridiculous import prices.
Mm-hmm.
Or you got to, you know to go to the Shatter Messiah MySpace page and order it from us there.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes, you know, that gets lost in the cracks and people are looking for it at Walmart. Of course, with a society-friendly album title like God Burns Like Flesh, I'm shocked that it's not a number one seller coming out of Walmart. Right next to, you know, Bouncy Cannoli's, what's her new album? The Strength of Myra or something? Whatever. I'm so plugged in, kids.
You know, speaking of labels, do you know who you're putting the record out with? Is it the same one? Or?
We're not sure. You know, we're probably done with Dockyard One at this point, just from, you know, they've had a lot of problems over the last 2 years, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
They tied in with a label over there that ended up going under, and so I think they kind of got into some trouble with, like, money and this and that. So we haven't gotten a straight answer from them in, you know, a few months, and I'm not holding my breath. Again, I personally think that the day of the record label is almost at an end because they're able to record and distribute your music so efficiently and so cheaply and to do it so well. I mean, you hop on YouTube, you see great bands like Testament and Exodus, like, recording, you know, in a basement with plywood walls or a storage facility and sending it to somebody who, you know, like Andy Sneap, who's brilliant at mixing and you get amazing records.
Yep.
So again, it's just getting so affordable for the artist to control and put out and have a great sounding product at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. We could fire up the boom box and the Radio Shack mics and we're good.
Yeah.
Now, I had another question. This person was unnamed, but they wanted to ask you, what is the most difficult thing about being a producer?
When I'm producing Shatter Messiah is letting stuff go. Like, especially when it comes to recording guitars, Jason can attest to this. He'll back me up. Jay will leave for, you know, his, you know, day. about 8 a.m. in the morning, and I'll be downstairs playing guitar on a Shatter track. He'll come back 9 hours later, and I'm still working on the same track. And he will literally walk in the room and go, "What are you doing? It's not right yet. It's not tight. It's not done yet. It's still not. He's like, "Stop it already. Move on. It's good." Jay will literally have to come in and whack me with a 2x4, or Bob will have to tell me, like, you know, I'll finish a song or a set of songs. "Yeah, these are going to be on the new record." And then the next week, I'm like, "Yeah, we're not using those songs." And Bob will just tell me, "No, you're dumb. We're putting them on the album." And invariably, Bob is always right, where the songs that I think are the worst, and like the label likes them the best, or fans like them the best.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the hardest part as far as producing Shatter Messiah.
Mm-hmm.
When producing other bands, it's really about finding the stride of the individuals in that band, like figuring out how the drummer likes to work,
mm-hmm.
or the guitar player, the singer, the bass. Like, you know, some guys are real persnickety. Some guys, you know, you can yell at and scream at, and they're just like, "Okay, I'll do better." You know, some guys you say, "Well, dude, that sounded a little, you know, that solo was a little out of key," and they just fall apart and like disappear for weeks.
Persnickety? Is that a candy bar?
No, that's a Snickers. I'm trying to bring back old school.
That's
Blatherskite.
That's
Blabber and Blatherskite.
Well, we're gonna
Wackio.
That's Wackio. G money. So that's the hardest thing about producing, and then really trying to, you know, when you're working with like an unsigned band or you know, maybe a local band, you know, making a mix that they're happy with, that you also know as a producer, you know, a label will be interested in, instead of, you know, the drummer coming in with 8 pages of drum notes, like, "Oh, well, this kick drum on this part, I couldn't hear it like the other ones, and oh, there's this one little ice bell hit that I did that I don't hear." It's, you know, versus like working with a band that's put out, you know, a few records, and they just trust you to make it sound killer, and they don't agonize over silly details, you know, things like that. That's maybe the biggest challenge.
Well, we're going to play a song here. Song you actually did a video for, Idolater.
Cool.
Off of God Burns Like Flesh. And again, any questions you want to send me, email me, officermetal@metalcommand.net, or give me a call here, 440-826-7846. Of course, we're on the air here with Kerr Murphy and Jason Chamberlain of Shatter Messiah. And that's Idolater by Shatter Messiah off of the album God Burns Like Flesh, and made a video for that one.
It's probably the greatest song I've ever heard in my life. Everyone can just stop right now. Just give up. That's a joke.
I did have a question from somebody actually here. Was, you know, your Strictly 7 guitars.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You know, Strictly 7 guitars that you do endorse, right, and endorse you. Whatever,
my signature
that works.
Series Messiah. Love it.
And, you know, talk about that whole, talk about those guitars, and talk about how that came about and things like that.
Well, the president of the company, Jim.
Hi, Jim.
He actually had had recorded at my studio a few times doing bass tracks, humorously enough. And then he had come to me maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago. "I'm starting this guitar company. Would you be interested in, you know, I'd love to endorse you. And I know you have this other endorsement, but you're always complaining about 7 strings and not staying in tune and this and that. Would you let me build you one?" "Well, sure, Jim. What the heck, you know?" So as I kind of found out that he was actually really serious about starting a guitar company and not just like, you know, doing a parts guitar from like Mighty Might or, you know, something silly like that, I really got excited about it. I'm like, "Well, dude, will you build me a for real signature series, the kind of guitar I've always dreamed about having?"
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Sure. No, what do you want?" So literally gave me a blank page and said, "Well, I've always wanted a Flying V. But, you know, cut a certain way, to look a certain way.
Yeah.
You can't ever find them. They don't exist. And I have this vision, this idea, and you know, 24 frets and all these things." And what ended up happening between Jim and I, he started sending me guitars to break, for lack of a, you know, because I'm really painfully hard on my gear. But really, that's why I can't keep other stuff in tune. That's why other guitars don't last. And it's always a battle when I take stuff out on tour to keep things running.
Yeah.
I'm just hard. I'm a hard player. I hit real hard, and I'm real aggressive live, and, you know, people who've seen me play live know that. So he started, you know, building me these tanks, these just guitars that I couldn't break. I couldn't knock them out of tune. you know, I was walking downstairs into the loud room carrying, you know, my two Messiahs, my first two prototypes, and I dropped both of them on accident, not on purpose. And no, I wasn't drunk. I was completely sober. I just, like, you know, fumble, hey! And they were still in tune. I'm like, yeah! Called Jim. I'm like, Jim, you build the best guitars. So Jim took a lot of kind of the abuse and what I was doing in, you know, and put him into his standard, you know, quote unquote production model guitars. And the great thing is that he's doing 100% American made guitars that in some instances are actually cheaper than import made in Korea, made in China, made in Indonesia. Fancy guitars that need tons of work, new pickups. His guitars out of the box are literally plug in and go. And even his cheapest production models, the option list and the lack of additional cost for those things, like if you like EMGs or if you like Seymour Duncan or if you like DiMarzio pickups or if you want this kind of body or this kind of wood, if it doesn't cost him extra, he doesn't charge extra. And that's the kind of mentality, like with how I run my studio with like a package deal. Well, here's what it's going to cost, and it doesn't really need to get outside of that. And that's something that, you know, all of these boutique builders just, I think, are, you know, they're taking themselves a little too seriously, charging $8,000 for a guitar or an amplifier. For real guys, it's about $200 in parts. You know, Jim buys the same wood as Paul Reed Smith. So why is a Paul Reed Smith $8,000 and Jim's guitars are $1,500-$1,600 Strictly7.com. And they make six strings and eight strings and seven strings. And if you come to him with something, he, his, I always made the joke, it's like, it's so cool, Jim, we never have to say no to people when they ask questions about the guitars. You know, because I have been helping him. I go to the shows and his guitar shows and, you know, answer questions and try to help people understand what Jim's doing. And it's just really cool for a change, instead of, you know, no, we don't do that. Like, you know, Ibanez, we don't do that. You know, here's Jim. Yeah, I'll do it. Okay.
Now, how'd the NAMM show go for you? I mean, I know you went down there to display the guitars.
And NAMM was a blast. It was so cool. I got to run into so many, like, old friends of mine that I toured with, like, you know, Meikle from Opeth when I was playing guitar for Nevermore. And he, you know, he was at the Paul Reed Smith booth. I'm walking by. All of a sudden, Curran, hey! You know, and so it's cool that, you know, it's been, you know, that many years since I've seen him. And he's still, like, out of a crowd of, you know, 800 people walking by, he spots me. You know, my buddy Joey Vera from Armored Saint, I did a tour with him. When I was in Annihilator, you know, he was in one of the bands we were playing with. And out of the blue, he's like, hey, my old guitar tech was there. Just lots of really cool people. Chris from Megadeth, his wife Steffi, just, you know, bump. Oh, hey, it's so, it was so cool. That part of it, the guitars, people literally were losing their minds. Like, these are how much? They're only, you mean you're, this one's $1,500 and it, and that, what, that street price? Whoa, I'm right, you know. And, I got a lot of people were interested in the little guitar pedals I build and stuff too, which I, you know, license through Jim.
Do you ever get people that, and I, sometimes you have a product that's really good and the price is really low. Do you get people who think it's like too good to be true? Is this real? Yeah, really?
A lot of the internet forums are like, oh, it sounds fishy. Oh, something's not right. No, no, there's no way it can be that cheap. Well, actually, it can be that cheap when, you know, you're, again, not taking yourself too painfully serious. So.
Well, we're going to go into the news here in a few seconds. Going to play a song, Never to Play a Servant, off of title track off of your debut record.
Yeah, great record. Love that. Again, another classic genius song. Throw away your Iron Maiden and Judas Priest. Just buy our records 10 times. I'm sorry, that's a joke. I really like both of those bands. They're way better than me.
Well, here you go. We're going to take it into AP News and, of course, be back for the 11 o'clock hour. And again, Shadow Messiah, Curran Murphy, and Jason Chamberlain. Here you go. Never to Play a Servant. And we're back here on the Metal Command Show. And you just heard Frailty, which is actually one of the listeners of the show. It's actually one of the more requested songs by the band.
And just so you know, we are going to play that one tour. That is in the live set.
Rock and roll.
So, you know, I did have a question, a fan question. And this is called from Jeff in Strongsville. And it, oh, Strongsville, Ohio, which is a suburb.
I know Jeff, and I hate his guts.
He wanted to know.
I'm just kidding.
What were your most positive experiences from touring with Annihilator and Nevermore?
Really, the biggest, the big, huge, huge positive, I'd say there are two.
Mm-hmm.
One is my guitar playing improved dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, having to keep up with, you know, Loomis and Waters. Hey, mm-hmm. two phenomenal guitar players.
Yeah.
The other thing was getting to see the rabid devotion of metal fans.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you say what you want about, like, oh, well, it's not as big in America as it is in Europe. Yeah, that's true. I mean, there are times you get into certain parts of America and you play for three people. You go to Europe and, you know, every night is packed and they're just insane, you know, for metal. That would be like one of the biggest things, really, is just that really cool, you know, like, I love metal. Oh, you know, they just buy your records, they buy your shirts, they love your band, they come and see you play, and they just really like what you create and do. And that's like one of the big positives. And that, you know, the cool thing is that spills over for me in Shatter Messiah as well. You get emails from people, people buy your records, you know, I can't wait to get it, and it's just so cool when people like what you create, because, you know, we all make music to make ourselves happy, but
mm-hmm.
deep down inside, we want other people to like it too, so we can feel cool.
Don't let anybody lie.
It is amazing, because like I found like a couple metal websites that have looked up my old local bands.
Yep.
That,
yep.
You know, yeah, that's like cool. How that's do you guys really know cool. that? You know, like I was in that band 10 years ago, and they got it posted. And they yep. still have the old like MySpace and songs posted, and so I'm like, wow, that's amazing.
Metal Archives. Yep.
Yeah,
is that
metal, yeah, that's it. Metal. I found a couple others that had it too. Yep,
they found a bunch of. I was kind of freaked out. I'm like, did they do like a background check on me or something?
Yeah. And then I had somebody write me from Japan once, wanting me to send them old demos of my old bands,
mm-hmm.
you know, because they found out about me through Shatter, and I was like. I'd love to, but I just don't have any of the material anymore. I shunned it all and burn it.
Yeah, Jay is very much about what's in front, not what's behind.
That's
yeah.
right. Looking to the future.
You can misconstrue that in several ways.
I have another one. This is actually from Harold from Germany.
Excellent.
Oh, I know that guy.
Deutschland.
He wanted to know.
Great beer.
Well, he wanted to know what albums and what bands got you into metal.
Me?
Anybody?
Like playing guitar? Well, we'll start with me. No, not what got me into music. We're not going to go there. That's too long of a story, and I'm not ready to lose all of my metal cred tonight. Bad medicine. someone dig that one out of the archives, baby. No, what got me into metal and playing guitar was Metallica One.
Mm-hmm.
I never professed to be a super deep dark underground metal guy. I don't know. I'm too dumb for that. I don't know. But One by Metallica, getting the tablature music, figuring out that you don't have to read music and do the Mel Bay chord book. That's what got me mm-hmm. into playing guitar and into metal.
Mm-hmm.
That so, yeah, Metallica One.
For
single.
Me, the heavier stuff. And on the way here tonight, we were talking about that particular concert. For me, it was also Metallica
mm-hmm.
when they played down in Akron for the Monsters of Rock with Van Halen and Scorpions. And after seeing that show, after seeing Metallica play for the first time for me live, I was ruined, man. That was it. The next day, I bought everything they owned up to that point, and Justice was coming out in 2 months after. And so, mm-hmm. yeah, for me, it was Metallica too for the heavy stuff, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I had another question here, and this is from Jeremy in Lakewood, Ohio. Wanted to know.
Hi, Jeremy.
Wanted to know, what is the difference between metal fans in Europe and in the U.S.? Is there one?
Baloney breath and unibrows. You pick which side of the pond who gets what. I'm just kidding.
They smell like soup.
They smell like beef vegetable soup. No, honestly, maybe the accent. Because really, if you put, you know, one guy in a bullet belt and the jean jacket with the patches up against, you know, from Germany up against the same looking dude from Cleveland
mm-hmm.
or where have you, hey, you might not be able to speak the language, but it's like, oh, Creator, Exodus, oh, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, man, that's the common ground. So there's no difference. Everyone, when you're into metal, it's like one really cool, big, brotherhood and family.
And another question that was also was a European person, and they didn't leave a name or anything. They wanted to know if you're going to tour or play in Europe.
We would love to. If any promoters are listening to this, please feel free to contact us through the Shattered Messiah MySpace page. Really,
send plane tickets.
Yeah, that's the big thing is, you know, we do get requests to play over there, and man, God love it. We would love to be over there. And, you know, I always tell people, it's like, man, if we were on tour 10 months out of the year, month off to write a record, and then a month of vacation, hey, we'd be happy. It's the cost. It's really getting over to your, you know, buying the plane tickets, making sure you got a vehicle, renting equipment. You know, it's easy to rack up a 20, 30 grand bill before you've even played a show.
Yep.
So, you know, and we don't need to be in a fancy bus. We've told people that, hey, man, we'll be in a van. We don't care. We just want to get out and play, because if people want to see us play or hear our music, game on. We're there. Yep. Bring it. So.
Now, as far as the next Shattered Messiah album is concerned, do you, I mean, have you guys started writing it? Have you guys started doing any recordings and stuff like that? And when do you plan on possibly having it out or finishing it?
I have a loose goal right now for like a late summer, early fall release. We have, like, I've got 7 songs right now. Probably maybe 4 of them I'll be sick of and want to, like, get rid of, and then Bob will have to stop me. But we have 5 with Mike, having already cut some vocals, and they're demos, you know, drum machine, no bass guitar, stuff like that. And everybody's response that I've played it for, I played it for some friends out in L.A. when I was at the NAMM show, played it for people here that have come to the studio, and everyone's response is like, wow, I didn't think you'd be able to top the stuff with Wags when you said new singer, oh, geez. But the reaction's been great. Like, people are really blown away with how much, you know, everyone always says, oh, this record's our best stuff ever. Well, of course it's your best stuff ever. It's your newest stuff. You've progressed as a human being and as a player, hopefully. So, you know, this stuff, I think, it's really, really good. And
it's going to be a concept album. It's about puppy dogs, unicorns, and Facebook.
Smurfs.
Yeah, so it's got a theme.
those last remarks will be stricken from the metal record. Our album will continue to embrace the dark blood of evil at all turns.
So
fetal grindings. Everyone get pregnant and have abortions? No, just kidding.
Now, the one thing I did want to ask is, at least personally for me, do you ever...
Did I cross a line with that one, dude?
Do you ever worry about that second singer stigma? You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, you mean like when Iron Maiden went from Paul Di'Anno to Bruce Dickinson? I worry about it constantly. It really makes me nervous. It worries me a whole bunch. Can you guys sense the sarcasm? And I apologize about the abortion joke. I hope I didn't get anyone upset. I just make jokes.
Well, with the second singer, though, I mean, you know, what many people don't realize, and this is actually another question I had sent to me, you know, how difficult is it to really find musicians
impossible
to mesh with? And, you know, how difficult is it? How do you know when someone comes down and auditions or does anything like that?
It is so hard to know. Like, let me put it to you this way. For the Dallas or Die tour, this April tour we're doing, I literally started, because, you know, we parted ways with Dusty, but I got to have another guitar player. I started looking for guitar players about 4 months ago. I've gone through about 8 guys.
Yeah. It's a lot of people.
Can you hear the pregnant pause in my voice?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not through, like, dudes who come in and are just jokers and can't play. It's guys who come in, and I like to think I'm a pretty nice guy and easy to get along with and not a mean, yelling at you kind of person, but they would just stop showing up. Hey, dude, we were supposed to get together today. Leave a message. Never hear back. Call again. Hey, man, what happened? Never call. So you kind of get the hint. It's like I'm the jilted girlfriend. Why don't you call me anymore?
Yeah.
So I went through that. I had a couple of guys, you know, who were touring guitar players for other bands who had contacted me, like, out of the blue. Like, hey, dude, you need a guitar? Yeah, as a matter of fact, I do. Oh, well, how would we make this? Start talking to them for a couple of weeks back and forth, and then they fall off the face of the planet.
Yeah.
No, I can't do it, man. I can't leave my job.
Well, so for the tour, we've got a cardboard cutout and a backing
and an inflatable
track.
Inflatable guitar
with a whammy neck.
Whammy neck.
And it'll be a backing track for the second guitar.
No, we actually, a good friend of Mike's is coming up from Kentucky. His name's Pat, and I'm not sure, I know he plays in bands down there. I didn't bother to ask. I was too busy showing him, you know, Shattered Messiah stuff to care.
Really nice guy, too.
And he is a really nice guy, and he's agreed to, you know, break his fingers for us on this one. I called him the other day, and he's like, man, some of that stuff you wrote, dude, I don't know what's going on. But, so he's you know, buckling down right now. But yeah, he's going to come out on this tour with us, and you know, we're going to have a lot of fun, you know, making his life hell.
Yeah, he's going to suffer us for 2 weeks.
We're gonna play a song here, and the song that I'm going to play is probably one of the most requested tracks by you guys, The Church of Christ.
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, again, that is another, it's, you know, you might as well put that on a Queen record. It's so brilliant. I'm sorry, please, I hope people understand the joke and the humor here.
Talk about the recording
so
of that.
Much flack.
You know, you were telling me about, you know, it was like a 45-minute vocal session to record that.
That tune, Dirge of the Christ, was like the last one to get done for God Burns Like Flesh.
Yeah.
And I just had no lyrics. All I had was that album title, and literally I had, like, that day that Wags came up, and like 3 other days to get the album mixed and delivered to the record label, which is a whole nother story. they upped our delivery date by like 4 months. Hey, we need it, but what? So Wags came up, and in classic Wags fashion, and this is one thing that is always great about Wags, and was so awesome working with him on. He came up, and I started just kind of scrubbing some lyrics down, and here, run down and try this, and we would hammer out a verse, and then, oh, I got an idea for the chorus. Oh, I got an idea for the other verse. Oh, I got an idea for the bridge. And we literally in 45 minutes cranked out that tune, and it came out phenomenal. Like, literally, Wags and I were on cloud nine. Like, man, I can't believe that just happened. I mean, we're really kind of good, you know. I mean, that whole thing, you know, you're in the fishbowl of your band, and you know, high fiving yourself and all that, you know. Yeah. Like, dude, we're the greatest thing since sliced bread, you know. But you know, so that's such a funny story that how that happened. It's like, from nothing to 45 minutes later now, to having a really good tune.
For many people that don't know, just how intense of a guy is he?
Wags has no off switch.
Intensity in 10 cities.
Yes, that literally sums up Papa Bear. No, Wags is the kind of guy, like, you know, some people put on like the jacket with the patches. The bullet belt, the shiny tight pants and all that, and then they like take it off when they get home, and they wear normal, like, quote unquote normal clothes when they go about their daily business.
Yeah.
That's Wags. It's like SpongeBob SquarePants only has one pair of pants. Wags only has one mode, and that's metal. Literally, when he says metal forever, bro, he's not joking. He literally means metal forever and everything else. You know, death to all butt metal.
Butt metal?
That's right.
He is
all but metal.
He is on in Viet Cong. I mean, this guy just...
He's an intense dude. Mike met him, you know, and Mike met him once. He came up and sang on some Pound tracks, just doing like some vocal, like, you know, kind of stuff. And literally when he left, Mike was like, Wags is kind of like a tornado that just, you know, in his southern drawl, he's looking at this, Wags is kind of like a tornado that just tears through, and like, nothing's the same ever again. I'm like, yeah, that really does sum that man up. And dude, I tell you again, it is a bummer that, you know, we parted ways and all that, but I mean, dude, I just can't say enough good stuff about the guy. He's an animal. He's a great guitar player. His band Halfway at the End is excellent. I mean, he's been in other legendary bands like Concussion. He sings for Breaker.
Yep.
He's not a schmuck. Mm-hmm. He's good, man.
No, I know.
I mean, you can't argue with it. So
yeah, I had to replace him too.
Yeah, that's right. Dude, he sang an Archetype. Yep. I mean, forget about it. Donning got stupid good reviews.
Yep.
In every Shatter Messiah review, there's always a huge section about how good Wags is.
Yep.
And how he sounds nothing like Worrell Dane. I don't think he does anyway. Oh, whatever.
People said he does.
Oh, we get the Nevermore comparison, and I think it's more from the guitar style, like how I play from all the years, you know, learning Loomis's style.
And yeah,
it kind of rubs off, man.
Mm-hmm.
You hang out with B.B. King, you start to sound like B.B. King, you know.
Yep.
But
well, anyway, we're gonna play the song "Dirge of the Christ" off of the newest album "God Burns Like Flesh," and we'll be back after this.
Attention business owners. Ever think of getting your company's name out over the airwaves? Well, now here's your chance. We here at WBWC offer many different affordable and beneficial ways to promote your business. Underwrite with us with pre-recorded spots, live mentions, and through our website at WBWC.com. For more information, you can contact the business department at WBWC at 440-826-2145. That number again is 440-826-2145. You can also contact us through email at business@WBWC.com.
And we're back here on the interview hour of the Metal Command Show, and you just
rock
heard
and roll.
We just heard "Church of the Christ," and which, of course, has always gone down very well with everybody. Talk about the tour. Where are you playing?
And thank you for requesting that, people. Really cool that people are requesting
that
song.
That we actually have like real fans. Like we get so depressed when we don't do stuff as a band.
I got an actual story for you about that. About that song. I remember one night, and I had really. What's really funny is that when I first played that song, I really played like Idolater and a lot of the stuff from the first album. So what happened was, at the end of the show, I always look for like one last song to play, and I look for a specific time to back time the news, and I saw the song. Let's play this. That song's 5 minutes.
So you hit
six.
The wrong song, is what you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, essentially, I hit the wrong track. I was actually going to play a different track off the record, and I'm like, and I sat back, I listened, I'm like, this song's cool. So the next day. Which is really interesting because I didn't think anybody really, paid much attention after, midnight or 12:30 or whatever. I got like 3 or 4 or 5 emails like, dude, what was that last song that you played? Because I didn't announce it. I hit the button and I'm like, oh, I just never announced that track. But like literally like 4 or 5 people emailed me. Dude, that was like the best thing.
I think I'm going to go a little deeper on this story. Let's be honest. When you're blinded by 12 brilliant tracks, it's hard to know which one to pick.
You just made me fart myself.
So then your fans at 88.3 and at metalcommand.net streaming realized the genius that had just happened. And they're like, what was that? It's so much. It's burned from our minds. Please tell us. It's like ecstasy. No, I'm just kidding. Burns holes in your shoes.
But literally,
we're musical drugs.
Actual, but I had actual emails that. And I'm like, what song did I play? And
that's wildly awesome. That's very cool.
Thank you, sir.
And all those people that emailed, we do hope that you'll come out and watch us tear it up live. Yep. In, if you're in Ohio, in Cleveland,
I'll be out there
at the Breakfast Club.
And you know what? It's really funny too. Is At No End is another band that I've played.
Dude, they're awesome.
Heavily on the show. And
we're kind of biting our nails on that one. Going, maybe we should have gotten a not so good band to play with us. Because man, we're gonna have to really be tip top, or we're gonna look like jokers stage.
Those guys are intense too, man. I had them down here. About last summer.
Yeah, they're awesome. They're
very good.
Jack and the boys.
We're bringing them with us on a lot of these dates. Mm-hmm. We're playing the Smiling Moose in Pittsburgh, PA. Mm-hmm. They're on that with us. We're playing Olna Jane's in Ashland, Ohio.
Yeah.
So for all you Southenders that don't want to drive 80 miles to Cleveland, we're coming down to your end of the woods.
Most people don't realize in like those small towns, like in Ohio,
how rabid they are for metal.
People, I mean, like, I remember playing like the Carriage House and some of these places that are real small. And you'd be shocked in a small town like that. And the clubs aren't big. Maybe 100, 200 people, but man.
Those are some of the best shows, man. Some of the best shows I've ever had have been that.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. People are intense down there.
Yeah, and then again, At No End's with us down in Kentucky. We're playing the Bar Lexington in Lexington, Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Then from there, we're hitting right into Texas. There's another promoter down there that wants to book some more Texas shows for us. Mm-hmm. So we might actually do like 10 shows in Texas. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're hitting the War Legion Underground in Amarillo, Texas. Fitzgerald's in Houston, Texas. We're doing a doubleheader on that Friday. So Fitzgerald's in Houston on Friday the 16th, and the Dallas Guitar Show that afternoon, mm-hmm, in Dallas. So it's like, we'll finish one show, drive 4 hours, ready to play another. That's metal.
That's how we bring it.
It's already been brought in.
You know, it's a really intense state to play a show in, and I never would have thought would be New Mexico.
I was going
to
say Utah.
Mm, no. West Virginia, sir.
Yeah, really? West Virginia, we were blown away. We played a show, Shatter Messiah, with Byzantine.
Yeah.
And it was like a Sunday night. And 300 kids showed up in this just dinky little brick room. It was out of control. It was great.
I mean, I think a lot of the reason too, a lot of those people, most bigger bands don't come through, and they don't want to drive anywhere. So when an actual metal band, and they hear it out,
they're starving for it. Yeah. And they appreciate it. Yep. That's the great thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
So playing those small places, that's good. You'd be surprised how many people come out. Mm-hmm. And most of the clubs, they don't charge like a ridiculous amount of money, like $90 to go see a band, or
$5 is rational, man. Yeah, I mean, there's $5, you bring a 20, you still got enough for drinks.
Well, had a couple questions here.
Yeah, fire away, please.
The other one is another guy from Cleveland, although he didn't.
I know him, too.
His name. He wanted to know why you moved to Cleveland. why you live here? You know, you lived in other places, obviously.
Two reasons. One was a personal family reason, and the other was I fell in love with a chick on tour. And
the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah. And I moved out here, and then 6 months later, she couldn't stand me. So, but at that point, I had, Bob's in the band and Wags in the band, and I'm like, well, I'm kind of trapped. So, with a great singer, I'm like, you know, screw it. It's cheap to live in Ohio. Mm-hmm. I don't mind the weather. I mean, sure, it snows, whatever. But so that's why I moved here. Mm-hmm. The reason was twofold.
Now, the other question the same person had is, what are you currently working on in the studio?
Well, obviously the new Shatter Messiah record. Mm-hmm. I'm finishing up the new Archetype record and finishing up the new League of Proper Musicians record.
Are you sure you're finishing up the Archetype record?
You know, that's up to certain people. It's kind of beyond my power. When they, you know, are ready to cut the umbilical cord, you know, we'll say, hey, it's a boy! You know, I'm also...
It sounds good, by the way.
I think it's, you know, the tweaks that are going on now, it's for, you know, to make everybody in the band happy. So I've got no beef, man. I think it's a brilliant sound.
It sounds killer.
It does.
Sounds killer.
I'm actually working right now. I'm in the midst of tracking the new Co-Conspirator record. Mm-hmm. So that album is going to be devastating when it hits. Those guys are from another planet.
They make you doubt your abilities as a musician.
I mean, literally, like all these, you know, chaos metal bands out there, like Dillinger Escape Plan and Behold the Arctopus, and there are a couple other, like,
I Wrestled a Bear Once.
Forget those guys.
That was the name of a band?
Yeah,
that is
the
name
of a band.
Oh my God.
All of those bands are chumps compared to what these guys do. And I can brag hard on a band that I'm on another band. I can't, you know, I mean, we all know that Shatter Messiah is the greatest metal band in the history of metal, and Lars and James ought to just hang it up and give us their stage. But no, but when, I mean, when a really unbelievably good band rolls in, and these guys are they're so good it's dumb. So Co-Conspirator, I'm doing that. Beyond that, I got there's a couple bands. There's a band from Boston I'll be working with this year. There's actually two bands from Boston I'll be working with this year. There's a band from Indiana I'll probably be working with. Well, no, there's no probably about it. I'll be doing a record with them. A couple other things, you know, I anticipate. There's like one or two bands in Chicago that I'll be working with. You know, a lot of out-of-state stuff. I'm actually hoping to maybe pick up some national or international acts. I might go to London this year and make a record. Just, you know, a lot of different stuff. You know, it's cheaper for me to go to a band than for a band to come to me sometimes. So. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But that's really what's going on at Smiley Sound.
Now, how could somebody get in touch with you? You know, what's your
very, very easily. Either through the Shatter Messiah MySpace, my personal Curran MySpace, my Curran Facebook. Also, my recording studio, Smiley Sound Studios. Mm-hmm. We have a MySpace page as well. It's real easy to get in touch.
You're one of those people on Facebook. You play Farmville and all those games, don't you?
No, actually.
It's awful.
Sorry, man. I'm busy making records and playing guitar.
Wags plays Farmville.
I'm busy making records and playing guitar. He already has 700 songs written. He's done.
He always asked me to join and help him build a barn.
Do the Amish have enough practice building barns? More power to them.
Every time I'm on Facebook, I'm like, why am I on Facebook? I'm not getting it at all. And like, I don't know how to see my comments. And you know, people will write me, and I'm like, I see it 5 weeks later, and they think I'm being a jerk not responding. I didn't know that.
Also need to let people into the light of the darkness that is Jason. He's the very first MySpace suicide, self-deletion.
Yes. I just one day I
had enough.
I had it, and I just deleted the account. You know,
golf clap for MySpace suicide. Jay, you're my hero. You're blazing new trails in non-connectivity.
Well, I felt like I was back in seventh grade again. You know, all this he said, she said stuff.
And, yeah,
you know, just and people were stalking you. You know that. You know, maybe you had a relationship that went bad, and you know that every day they're looking at your MySpace, or you're looking at theirs to see what they say and this and that. And it's so juvenile. I just couldn't.
But don't you know that life doesn't evolve past seventh grade?
Like
every real job I've ever had, it's always seventh grade stupid.
That's probably why I still laugh at farts all the time. So, you know.
I'm farting right now.
You know, you were talking earlier.
He's laughing.
You were talking earlier about, you know, nowadays not needing a label. And do you think that it's pretty easy for bands now to put their stuff out? Do you think, what do you see record labels? Do you see record labels being gone 5, 10 years from now?
I like pie. Oh, I'm sorry. I was somewhere else. Record label's gone in 5-10 years?
Yeah.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah.
Do you really? Goodbye. I mean, again, you can get a studio environment together mm-hmm. for less than $2,000. Mm-hmm. You can record your band. It might not sound awesome, but at least you're getting your artistic vision out. Put it up on anything except iTunes. I hate iTunes. Mm-hmm. I hate iTunes. It's the worst thing ever. I mean, Amazon.com, you can download just as easily.
Mm-hmm.
And MySpace, yeah. Snowcap.
There you go.
All of these great resources for musicians. The problem... I mean, the biggest problem is you got to sift through the horrible bands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I don't know, what are some of the worst bands ever? Like
Shatter Messiah.
No, that's the best band.
That's the best band ever.
No, like, you know, like, I mean, you got to put up with Metallica and Megadeth and Anthrax and all these, you know, Dream Theater. Oh, look at how many notes I can play. You know, these guys are worthless. No, I'm kidding. Again, sarcasm. I'm not trying to make enemies. I'm just, my big mouth is being silly and people might not understand the humor. But no, I think it's great. And
just say LOL at the end of everything.
Oh, that way that the tweens will understand.
Exactly.
So I think it's awesome. And I think that record labels, unfortunately, are... What can they really do for bands except take your money and your music?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what's that about anymore? It used to be that's the only way people could get music out and mm-hmm. get music to people. Or the only way people could get music was you got to go to the store, buy the CD, buy the record, buy the tape, the 8-track, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I watched
that's over now.
An interview with Dave Mustaine today where he said that pretty much the same thing. He is hoping for the end of record labels. He says he's laughing his butt off right now at how much money they're losing. So because they've been taken from me for years.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Every artist is, you know, Jim from Nevermore told me a great story about, you know, the record contract they got with like Atlantic or Epic or whatever label they were signed with in Sanctuary
mm-hmm.
versus the contract they got from Century Media. It was like, you know, 100-some bazillion pages versus like 16.
Yeah.
And he's like, it was a more condensed version of how they were taking all of our money and everything.
Yeah.
But I mean, still, it's like pretty soon you'll be able to control all of your money.
Mm-hmm.
Just don't release anything through iTunes because they never pay you.
I think the worst label story I personally ever heard was the fine gentleman from Into Eternity. You know, the record label bought them a so-called tour bus. It was a short bus. Yeah, it was a little short bus, you know, RV type thing that, like, yeah, they got it for us for like, what, $25,000? And it was, looked like it was made in 88, you know.
And we had bought the same bus for like $1,500.
Yeah, and, you know, they're going to be owing them that money forever to pay that back for this broken down bus. You know, it's horrible.
And now, unfortunately, I think that band is dead.
Well, no, they did put an album out last year. I think they're still around. You know,
no. Good, because they were really awesome. We actually played a show with them mm-hmm. like 2-3 years ago.
Yeah, great band,
They were so.
Singer actually
good.
Did a guest on an album.
He has lovely hair. Dude, Jason, don't talk about that stuff on the internet.
No, Stu is one incredible singer.
Yeah.
He's got three ranges.
Stu,
you know.
Art.
He'll do the death metal stuff, which I love personally, and plus he's also got the sonic range stuff. That guy, when we played that show with him, blew me away because
really?
they had a previous singer, and that I saw them play with
used to
Nevermore.
Be the guitar player.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean they had another separate singer.
Yeah, see, I'm totally.
And I had seen them at that time open with Nevermore and Opeth, and you know I thought they were a pretty good band, but when they got that new guy Stu, wow! Incredible.
And Stu knows how to wear the metal gauntlets. He makes you believe it.
Yes.
Metalgauntlet.com. I don't. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, we're gonna play another track here.
Don't hate me, Stu.
Song called Bad Blood. Off of
Rock and Roll.
Off of Never to Play a Servant. Here we go. We're with Shatter Messiah here in the Interview Hour of the Metal
Catchphrase,
Can.
Catchphrase, Rock and Roll.
And that is Bad Blood by Shatter Messiah off of Never to Play a Servant. And
metal. I mean, Rock and Roll.
Pure you know, genius.
Talk about you know, getting the band together and recording the first album. You know, what was that like for you? I mean, you were here in Cleveland or at least in this area, and mm-hmm. you just started recording that album. And talking about recording that record and talk about, you know, writing, recording, all that stuff. Your first, your debut record with
that record
band.
Was actually done in like absolute reverse, where instead of having a band and writing songs and then making a record and then mm-hmm. releasing it, I didn't have a band.
Mm-hmm.
It was literally me in my recording studio writing tunes and just arranging music. And, you know, I'm not sitting around waiting to try to audition people to find people to do this. I've done that before. Everybody has done that, and it's a colossal waste of time in my book. So what ended up happening was I started going around to clubs and saying, hey, here's a CD of this project I'm doing, or would you be interested in, you know, just singing on it or playing drums? You don't have to join the band or quit your band or anything. That's kind of what I did, and I ran into some really cool people who are like, well, I'm not into this, but I got a guy, or I know somebody who would be, mm-hmm. or this or that. And that actually happened with the ex-drummer from Wintersbane. He's like, dude, I'm not interested in playing this stuff, but I got a singer that I think would be awesome, and that was Wags.
Mm-hmm.
And so Wags was like the first piece of the puzzle. When he came in, literally, you know, the Dirge of the Christ story where we had mm-hmm. nothing, and we in 45 minutes we had that song that everybody really likes.
Yeah.
Literally inside of 10 minutes after giving Wags the Shatter Messiah spiel of, well, you know, it's not like a full-time thing. I'm just putting it together, just come mm-hmm. in and sing. We were recording. We recorded a song that day.
That's just how intense he is.
And that's how intense he is. He's like, well, look, you got a mic? Let's go. Like, I mean, that's, and it's like, I was expecting him to like, oh, okay, cool, let me think
what
about
was your
it.
Reaction like, to that? Like, when he just said, get a mic?
I was taken back. Was I was
that,
like.
Was that the first time you met him?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Absolute first time he came over and he's like, well, let's do it. Let's go. Give me a mic. Okay. Sure. He literally, I was just like shocked that, mm-hmm. sure, snap of the fingers, go. And, you know, I met Bob's on tour. He was playing drums for Annihilator,
yeah.
Handpicked by Mike Mangini to take his place.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, for a goof, handed Bob's the drum machine and guitar demo
mm-hmm.
and just said, hey, give me your opinion. Do you think that this is good stuff or is it garbage? Because I don't know. Bands, it's so hard when you're in your own band and mm-hmm. doing your own thing to know if you're any good or if you're terrible. Because mm-hmm. everybody thinks what they do is genius. I mean, luckily, I know that everything I do is genius. So,
mm-hmm.
again, being silly. But, you know, Bob came back to my hotel room, you know. Can I play drums in your band? You're hired. I mean, if you can play Annihilator, you're good. And he said, well, hey, I got a buddy of mine, Ron, who plays bass.
Yeah.
You know, can he come in and audition when I come to cut drum tracks
yeah.
for the record? And that's just how it went, you know? And then, you know, we auditioned guitar players after the record was done, and we got our deal in place and everything, and Dusty worked out. And then Ron had to bow out to do family stuff back in Massachusetts, and Jay, just through mutual friends, I'm not even really sure how that all came about, mm-hmm. of Jay getting in the band. I mean, he is a soulless, silent killer. So he just kind of materialized in the room, and I'm playing bass. All right. I mean, what do you say to Dracula when he comes in the room? Sure, have a drink, you know.
No, that was, I was working at the music store that you would shop at occasionally.
Oh, that's right. Dude, tell the story. It's great.
Yes.
You're part of it.
Yes.
That's awesome. It's awesome, dude.
Okay, so I was working at a music store, not record store, music store. There is a difference. But mm-hmm. Curran would come in once in a while, and you know, buy stuff, and then I would talk to him, and I, you know, just, hey, what band are you in? And he's like, oh, I'm an Annihilator, and I'm like, God.
And I said it really arrogant yeah. and jerky like
no,
that.
No, he didn't. He's really, honestly, quite soft spoken sometimes, if hard to believe, but no, he's like, oh, I'm in a band called Annihilator, and I'm like, oh, man, here is another one of these idiots that did not research the name first. It's like, there's already a band called Annihilator. I'm like, oh, really? Like, and I thought I'd be kind of a smart aleck. I'm like, oh, you mean like the Alice in Hell, you know, Annihilator band? He's like, yeah, that's the one. I'm like, really? That's cool. And then
those records suck. Yeah. Can I have your autograph? No. No, he did not say that.
No,
those records don't suck.
So he left, and then one of the other employees who's in Co-Conspirator, the mighty band we talked about earlier, he's like, yeah, that guy was also in Nevermore. I'm like, Nevermore? No, come on, now somebody's pulling my leg. You mean to tell me this guy was in Nevermore and Annihilator? And sure enough, so then, you know, he'd come in the store and him and I would talk, and then he one day invited me over to his house just to hang out. And I had a little bit of a studio at my home, and he had his studio, and I wanted to compare notes with him. And so we got to just hanging out, and next thing I know, he says, hey, you know, if you know any bass players. I said, well, you know, I'm actually a guitar player, but I've played bass in the past in a few other bands, and if you guys need some help, I dig the material. I already heard the album, so I'd be happy to help out. And that's kind of how it got started.
And then during a rehearsal, I tried to chop Jason's house down with my guitar.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Well, we're going to play one more song going into the news, and we'll answer a few more questions after this, and then we'll be good. Here's All Sainted Sinners. Great track, by
one of my favorites.
Rock and roll.
Brilliant. Genius.
You know, one of the things, and this is something this person basically said to me, you know, they said that they've never, and I could kind of go from this angle too, because this would kind of have something to do with me as well, is you basically produce your own music. And, right, you know, for me as a musician, I know that having a producer, or at least a person they're recording with us, who's kind of like on the outside looking in, mm-hmm, and can really look at things objectively, do you find it very difficult for yourself, you know, since you're producing your own stuff, you know, do you find it more difficult for yourself to really get things down the way you basically like them, and stuff like that?
You know, the famous saying is never produce yourself, because mm-hmm, you'll never get done, you'll never finish, mm-hmm, or you're too close to it to know when to say, well, this isn't a good song, or, you know, this idea isn't a good idea. For me, though, I think I got a little bit of a leg up on that. I wish I didn't have to produce the band's records, but mm-hmm, because I don't get big fancy rock budgets to mm-hmm hire phenomenal producers like, oh, I don't know, Andy Sneap or Neil Kernan, you know, like really yeah amazing cats who know how to make records very well and very easily.
Mm-hmm.
Because I run a recording studio and produce for other bands, you know, I've learned how to be a producer, so I try to get into that mode when I'm working on Shatter Messiah,
mm-hmm,
which is sometimes a headache for people like Jason, you know, when he has to come in and tell me to stop recording that riff because it's been going for 12 hours and mm-hmm, dude, you've got it, just go to the next part. Or Bob, when I finish a song with lyrics and vocals and, yeah, we're not going to put that on the record. And he's like, what? You know, I overproduce myself where I, yeah, I'm too critical and too brutal. So, you know, I've got that advantage over, say, a band that buys their own studio equipment and records their own record. That's the problem of self-production, is when you only do your own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If you're recording a bunch of other guys, you learn how to listen to songs objectively, or listen yeah to performances, listen to ideas, or how to take ideas. Like, well, hey, maybe this part's not the strongest part. Let's cut that out of the tune.
Mm-hmm.
Or why, or what's going on here, you know?
Yeah.
And being able to translate that into working, you know, for Shatter Messiah as a producer. So
mm-hmm,
I wish I didn't have to do it, but hey, man, I got to make records. I want the band to keep making records. So mm-hmm,
and I tell them, I come in and tell them everything's wrong, and we rearrange it, and
yep,
it's done.
Yep, exactly.
Now, for your tour, and this is something I don't know why I didn't even think of this, but are you playing any new stuff?
Any new stuff? You mean like the new
songs,
the demo
new
stuff
songs
with Mike?
Yeah.
No, we actually, I tried to get that by Bobbler, and he said absolutely not. He's, because, I mean, really, we haven't done a show in like a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
We've been incredibly lazy.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, man, do you really want to complicate, you know, a new singer and a new guitar player with, let's make it hard for the other three guys and play a song that, you know, Kern, I haven't played any of these tunes yet because it's all just drum machine.
Yeah.
Does Jay know anything? I'm like, no. He's like, well, you know, don't be stupid.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, we're not going to play anything, any new unreleased Shatter Messiah stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, you know, he's like, hey, maybe we should learn like an Iron Maiden tune or a Metallica song and really do it killer. Maybe that would be cool. You know, we'll see what happens. It's a little loosey-goosey in regards to like when we get here, if the live set, all the songs that we've picked out and been practicing, if they go real easy,
mm-hmm,
then maybe we'll add some stuff or change some things, maybe mm-hmm add a different Shatter tune, or maybe add a new one, maybe add a cover. I don't know. It's, you know, long answer to a simple question. No, we're not playing anything new. We're only playing stuff off of
yeah
God Burns Like Flesh and Never to Play the Servant. So. Mm-hmm.
And by the way, we've mentioned Bob about a million times so far. Hi, Bob.
Yeah, Bob. Yeah.
Is he actually listening to us?
Well, who knows, but it's the kind of thing, you know. When
we love him. We just
he's my left arm. Jason's my right.
It's hard to wipe. Oh, sorry.
So Mike Mangini really picked him? You know, how did that happen, to pick him and replace him?
It's a great... Well, Bob the funny thing is, I got the story right from Mike Mangini, because I flew out to Vancouver to do the All For You video for Annihilator, and Jeff had paid for Mike to come out too.
Mm-hmm.
And so I ended up rooming with Mangini, and we're like hanging out, walking down the streets of Vancouver. He loves hockey jerseys, like real NHL hockey jerseys, which of course that's like, you know, military issue in Canada next to the denim tuxedo. Take that, Canada. No, I'm just teasing. But so he like went to bacon, like some hockey shops or something. I don't know. And hockey jerseys are expensive, like $180 a piece, like the real ones that the guys wear on the ice. Yep. So he bought like three of them. You know, Mike does pretty well. He teaches at Berkeley. He does clinics. He's kind of a fancy guy. World's fastest drummer. You know, people know who he is.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Yes.
Guinness World Record. Like, fastest hands and feet. Like, he's the overlord of drums. Like,
really?
Yeah, you look up drums in the dictionary, and right next to dough, it says drums Mike Mangini. So we're rooming together, and I ask him, like, well, hey, you're not doing the tour with us. He's like, oh, no, I'm not going out on tour. I make too much money doing Berkeley and clinics. I'm like, oh, all right. Well, who do you got? He's like, well, I got like 40 students, 40 guys who can play really good drums. And about 10 of those guys can do what I do. So they can play the Annihilator stuff and the other stuff, too, on the Annihilator records. But I got like one guy that I'm going to send to you. Mm-hmm. Like, really? Yeah, his name's Robert Falzano. And I didn't know. I'm like, oh, all right. And I, you know, kind of forgot about it after that. I'm like, well, why him? He's like, because of all the guys that I got, the guys who can play the stuff, the guys who can't, and Bob's, or Robert, you know, to him, Bob's to me.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, Robert's the only guy who has the mental capacity to handle the stress of playing an Annihilator. He's the only guy that won't murder everybody on the tour bus or what have you. I'm like, really? He's like, come on now, you know it's a hard gig. I'm like, well, yeah, it's stressful. I want to, you know, play the parts right. And he's like, well, yeah, but when Jeff's yelling at you because, you know, you're not playing it 100% right, or, you know, that gets, you start to sweat bullets, and a lot of guys can't, a lot of guys can't take it. Bob has the mental, you know, he's got the chutzpah to take it. And he is so good. And literally, Jeff hired him, drums unheard.
Yeah.
Well, Mike said that this guy is good, so I hired him. He's going to be playing with us on Judas Priest's stage in front of, you know, 10, 20,000 people a night while we're in Europe opening for Priest, because Halford's back and we got the gig. I'm like, really? You haven't heard him play? Are you sure that's the same? He's like, oh, Mike said he's good. That's good enough for me. I'm like, all right, cool. And boy, if it didn't turn out to be right,
You must have really trusted Mike with that then.
Well, I mean, you got to understand when Mike says, oh, this guy can do it. I mean, that's not a light.
Yeah.
I wouldn't. Mike has been in the business so long, he doesn't recommend anybody lightly. He doesn't like, oh, this guy should be able to do it. It's like, no, this guy can do it. He'll do it.
Yeah.
He'll do it just fine.
What was that like touring with Priest?
Really, really cool. I mean, come on, dude. I was playing. I mean, we were the annoying 30-minute opener before we got to the real deal of Judas Priest with Rob Halford back in the band. But the Priest guys were so cool. I was literally playing on the Painkiller stage. You're getting to watch them do sound check. And the funny thing was, the first show, they had set up their whole stage production the day before, and they were white noise testing the PA and all that stuff. And the guys were up on stage, like, just rehearsing little parts, like the rock endings.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, you, KK and Glenn, you guys come out, take your guitars, and we'll put them in here, and then the pyro will go, and then they'll bring the big electric guy thing. But they were, like, rehearsing a real non-block, like, not even really playing. Like, they play, like, for dugga 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 dugga, and then they'd stop, and then they'd get their stage. Like, they were really setting up the show to make it cool for the fans, which is brilliant, by the way. And we were supposed to set up and get a sound check, and we didn't, because they were up there working, right? So it went into our sound check time, into dinner time, and so it got to the point where, well, we're not getting a sound check. We'll just set up tomorrow before we play. All right, are you really going to go, man, screw those guys at Priest, those rock stars? No. I mean, hey, it's their stage, it's their rules. It's like, hey, I'm just cool to be on this. Like, right, dude, I'm opening for Priest.
Yep,
woo!
Yep.
And so we're like standing backstage, you know, waiting to go into the dinner hall, and all the guys come off the stage, and Glenn Tipton and KK Downing walked by us, and this greatest thing ever, they're like, oh, in their British accents, I can't really do a good British accent, but like, oh, fellows, you know, so sorry that we took a bit long and you didn't get a sound check. You know, we'll make sure that you get on stage and everything all right tomorrow. You know, like, mm-hmm. and it's like they're shaking our hands and apologizing
yeah.
for being on their stage and, you know, all right, cool, man. Did Glenn Tipton really just apologize to me and shake my hand
yeah,
and say
yeah.
sorry? Are you kidding me? And then like KK or so said, well, you know, it's the first time we've been on stage together in quite a few years, and so I'm, you know, the smart aleck. I'm like, well, have you guys rehearsed? I'm like, oh no, we don't. You know, we'll just get up there and kind of wing it. And like literally, dude, they didn't even rehearse or do like a real sound check. They just worked on the rock endings, and they got up that night or yeah. the next day for the show and killed it.
Yeah,
absolutely. It was like
we've been playing those songs for so long too. I mean, you know,
well, it's also just that, you know, they're such, you know, consummate professionals and mm-hmm. great musicians. I mean, come on, you know, I make the joke about Shatter Messiah being brilliant, but you know, who knows where the heck I'll be in 25 years.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, probably killed for a smart aleck comment about Dave Mustaine. You know, he'll like you know, Ong Bak me, you know, yeah. into the Stone Ages or yeah. something. But
you know, some bands can do that. I mean, you know, you don't. I mean, you know the material so well. You get together, you practice for like a week, and yeah. you know, it can happen like that.
Yeah. See, we have CDs, so we just practice to the CD like relentlessly.
Yeah.
And then because we, you know, we have to fly Bob's in from Boston. You know, yeah. 'cause our boy's out of town. You know, so you know, it's like, okay, how much time can we afford to take off work for rehearsal? 3 days? Okay, you know, that's yeah. all we can seem to get, but.
When you know the music well enough, it can happen, you know?
Yeah. But it was really awesome, you know, opening for Priest. And I met the guys in Scorpions at one of the gigs. They were really cool, like really nice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was hip, man. It was real hip. And those guys just got up there and they killed it. They really dig what they do. I don't know. It doesn't seem like they're aping it for the dough. They mm-hmm. probably don't need to do that. They're making records and doing what they love to do. So,
yep.
Dude, that's just awesome.
How many shows did you play with them over there?
We did. God, I want to say it was like 4 or 5. It was actually really short.
Yeah.
We were doing all the off dates in between, like the big festivals that they were playing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you know, they'd get to be on their big stage on the off dates, and we'd get to open for them, and then they'd go and play like Wacken
mm-hmm.
or you know Grass Pop in Belgium or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it was only a few, but it was a lot of fun. Every show was an absolute ridiculous event. So.
Sounds awesome. Well, we're going to play a last track here, and I believe that was all the questions we had. And
okay, great.
And we had, I mean, because a lot of people asked the same thing.
Well, I'll answer them again. I love the sound of my own voice, in case you couldn't tell.
But, yeah, you know, it was a lot of fun having you on again, and, you know, definitely looking forward to the 24th, at least here in Cleveland.
Yep.
Where I can throw eggs and...
Please do.
Bring tomatoes, potatoes.
At the Hi-Fi.
Yeah, well, it's the Breakfast Club now.
On the Hi-Fi stage.
The Hi-Fi right. stage.
Yeah, you gotta say it properly.
I don't
sorry.
Know why.
Sorry, Mr. Morrison. That's the owner, right? Yes. Billy Morrison? Still.
Billy Morris, I think.
Morris. Sorry, Billy Morris.
Yes.
Yes, okay.
No, Morrison's buried in France, dude.
Oh, yeah, that's Jim Morrison. Yeah, Billy. So, yes, it's the Breakfast Club on the Hi-Fi stage. The 24th, next month.
Why do they make it so complex, man? I mean... We're musicians. We aren't that smart. We're brilliant, but we're not that smart. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, you know, it'll be pretty good to see you guys live. I've never seen you live with anything, so
we're pretty good.
Well, make sure your life insurance is paid up.
Yep.
Because we kill it.
Yeah.
There's no other way to put it.
I can't wait to see that. And here we go. We're gonna play a song entitled
like Pie.
Go ahead, call
is that
it.
No?
What?
No.
Tomorrow Immortal. And this was Shatter Messiah, Curran Murphy, and Jason Chamberlain
thanks,
coming down
guys.
The show.
Yeah, thanks go. For having us, man. It's always cool to come on the show, and all the fans that emailed in and everybody, love to see you out on the road. Come on out, yep. Post on the MySpace. It's going to be great.